What is going on, Sharp Football family? It is your resident Swami of Konami, Rich Rebar, and we are officially 1 week out from NFL draft night. As a reminder to anyone that wants to head over to sharpfootballanalysis.com, you can check out all of the pre-draft work that I've done. Raymond Summerlin's done, Ryan McChrystal's done, Brendan Donahue is done. You can check all of that stuff out. All of the pre-draft content is free on the site. As a reminder too, you can sign up for me and Raymond Summerlin's fantasy football draft guide. You can use promo code SAVE5 on that, and you can also pre-order Warren Sharp's 2024 preview book. With all the housekeeping out of the way, like I said, we are 1 week out from the NFL draft, and that means we got to talk about this wide receiver class. Everyone's been kind of waiting on it, and when you talk wide receivers, you got to bring the guru in. I'm fortunate to kind of aged, you know, in this industry with my guest. You know, I think we've been doing this same exact show probably for over a decade. You do it with everyone now. Everyone tries to pull you in, but that is Matthew Harmon. You know him from Yahoo. You really know him from Reception Perception. So, Matt, what's going on, brother?
Rich, it's always a pleasure. Yeah, we have been doing this show in some form or fashion at one outlet or another, you and I, for, about 10 years now. I mean, I can remember back in my old apartment at, like, Fairfax, Virginia, before I moved to L.A. Now I'm back in Virginia and, like, talking about Devontae Davis and all these random players that never did anything and getting excited about these guys. So, man, I'm always happy to break down this stuff with you. And, you know, you're one of my favorites in the industry, and it's always a pleasure, man.
Yeah, I reached out to you, and I my oldest son, I'm getting him into, like, watching, like, some stuff he might have missed for football, and I was trying to explain to him the lore of Devin Smith the final year at Ohio State. And anyone that doesn't know about Devin Smith, like, the dude had 33 catches his last year at Ohio State and almost had 1,000 yards. Like, he averaged almost 30 yards per catch. It was absolutely bonkers. But I remember we were so bummed that, like, his NFL career just got snake bit and torpedoed.
It was one of those guys where it's like, yeah, if he could just stay healthy, like, he'll be really good. And then, like, the thing he could never do was stay healthy. So, yeah, super unfortunate. But, yeah, I remember Devin Smith, man. I still maintain that guy could run real routes.
Yeah, he was like, he almost got Cardale Jones drafted in the first round if he would have came out that year. It almost would have been happened. But, you know, no one's here to talk about Devin Smith and wants to hear us talk about Devin Smith. But before we get into the meat and potatoes of this draft class and talk about all the guys in your dynasty rookie drafts or who your team might draft at wide receiver this year, because there are going to be a lot of wide receivers drafted on day one and day two of this NFL draft. One of the things I've been doing with each guest is kind of taking, like, a top-down look at the position from an NFL stance, from a dynasty stance, just like a big overlook. And how long have you actually been doing Reception Perception? When was the year you started that?
10 years. So, well, I kind of started putting the process together behind the scenes in, like, late 2013, like, really charting players and testing and stuff like that. And the first articles I started to put out was in the summer of 2014. And then the first, like, year I did league-wide data was, well, league-wide, you know, I'm not charting every single player, that whole thing. There's guys way down the depth chart I'm not bothering with. But, like, you know, a wide selection of NFL players was to the 2014 NFL season. And then draft prospects I started doing for the 2016 draft class. Had a 2-year gap in 2019 and 2020, but ever since then, steadily charting every single draft class as well.
So literally no one's probably watched more wide receiver snaps than you for over the last decade. And what I want to find, you know, kind of pick your brain about is one of the things I always talk about is kind of the evolution of the NFL. You know, there's always a cat and mouse game. Offense has the upper hand for, like, a little period. Then defense has the upper hand for a little period. And you know, post-COVID, those two COVID years that were offense went kind of bonkers. We kind of come out of that. You know, we're in, like, a defensive meta right now. It's what I kind of always refer to it as. Scoring's dropped way down the past 2 years. We're seeing a lot, you know, less man coverage played in the NFL, a lot more zone, a lot more man coverage. Cover one has dropped 4 years in a row, the rate of cover one. Air yards per target remain the lowest in the 2000s last year. We're getting 23% of the passes are thrown at or behind the line of scrimmage. So teams are throwing behind the line of scrimmage more than ever. Teams are throwing over the middle of the field more than ever because of, you know, the too high stuff. And, you know, everyone loves to talk about that. And it's kind of created, like, a different offensive game. And what that has done from a passing stance is created kind of, like, way the wide receivers are used in the NFL and the type of wide receivers now that are good for fantasy. So I don't want to take all the good stuff from you, but, like, I kind of want to just pick your brain a little bit over the evolution since you've been charting all these things through all of, like, this nebulous era of the eras of the NFL, and just kind of want to get your top down look at, like, the evolution of the wide receiver position.
The biggest thing that I would say just league-wide, and we can really dive into the fantasy part of it mm-hmm. as well, but just league-wide, I think that there are more roles available for wide receivers now than there ever was before. Certainly back in like 2014, 2015, 2016, when I was first starting to chart NFL data, there are just guys that operate the position today that would never have really, I think, qualified for roles back in that time frame of the NFL. The guy that always comes to mind was kind of the first one that started like percolating this process, this thought process in my mind, was Cooper Kupp with the early Rams offenses. You know, I was funny. I was actually just talking about him today on our Yahoo show because we were talking about Brock Bowers as a potential pick for the LA Rams. And, you know, I almost kind of thought of it as like, he could be like a long-term Cooper Kupp replacement, because not really what Cooper Kupp is now, because Cooper Kupp, you know, he's a guy that just a couple of years ago won the Triple Crown, right? He led the NFL in catches, yards, and touchdown. But those early Cooper Kupp seasons, you look back at like the reception perception historical data, if you throw out Rondale Moore's like fake wide receiver season from like his rookie year, like that was not real. That's the weirdest profile I've ever charted since 2014 for sure. But if you exclude him, like nobody else had faced more zone coverage on a per route basis, nobody else had faced fewer press attempts on a per route basis in reception perception history than those early Cooper Kupp seasons. And to me it was like, man, that's crazy, because if you look at just the way he's built, he's not built like a slot receiver, but he almost is being used in these like slot receiver ways. He's being used as kind of like a almost like a tight end, really, again, which brings back the Brock Bowers point. Like there were literally snaps where he would chip a guy at the line and then go out into the flat and like be completely wide open against zone coverage. And again, all of this seems like, yeah, no kidding when we're talking about it right now here in 2024, but there were just not a lot of guys doing that in 2017, right? These big power mm-hmm. slot receivers. But now it's a pretty common thing, right? Like, I mean, I talk about the power slot role basically every draft class, because like I think everybody is kind of chasing that archetype at receiver, you know. So, and just how can you weaponize that slot receiver position? Like, you no longer have to be a X receiver that's built like Julio Jones or AJ Green. We have a few of them in this draft class, but you don't have to be that guy to be like your team's target leader. So that's the biggest thing to me, is that there are just players, like player roles and player archetypes, that are available and frankly common now that were not present in the game in 2014. I would even say really like not widespread throughout the league until the last few seasons, which does make it exciting, Rich, to talk about individual players when we get to that point, because it's just like, there are guys that can work out in the league now at the receiver position that wouldn't have been able to work out. And you got to get with the right team, and we can go through like draft right. history and point to, okay, yeah, Treylon Burks, I thought he should have been like a Juju Smith-Schuster style big slot receiver. The Treylon Bros hated that at the time when I said that, but you know what happened at Treylon Burks? He went with a coaching staff that went threw him at the outside X receiver position, and he's had injuries and stuff like that, but you watch right. him play and he can't get open. He can't separate out there, because that was just apparent from his college profile that he couldn't do that. So you still got to find like the right coaching staffs in the league, but there's so many of these guys that are spread throughout the league right now that have just opened up the position for guys that it wouldn't be open for previously.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of changed. Like, you look at like the wide receivers that are scoring a lot of fantasy points right now, and you're talking about guys like CeeDee Lamb, Amon-Ra St. Brown, you know, Tyreek Hill. Obviously, we still have Justin Jefferson is kind of like the one kind of traditional guy that kind of, you know, wins predominantly outside. But even combining the last 2 years, not just last year, the 1 year sample, but the last 2 years, and you look at kind of like the top guys and targets per game, it's Jefferson, it's Devontae Adams, it's Keenan Allen, Tyreek Hill, Ja'Marr Chase, CeeDee Lamb, Amon-Ra, Stephon Diggs, Puka Nacua, Michael Pittman, Garrett Wilson, Cooper Kupp. And like, you look at all those profiles over the past few years, only one of those players has run fewer than 20% of his routes in the slot. Only one of those players has gotten fewer than 50% of his targets within over 10 yards downfield, and that's Tyreek Hill. And he still gets a lot of like bunnies and freebies too. He does get a lot of stuff behind the line of scrimmage. It's just that he's like kind of the one receiver that still is like winning regularly downfield, because he's a unicorn. The dude is just faster than every other human that's playing football right now. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of manifested, because like, you look at it, like you bring up Cooper Kupp, and like the year Cooper Kupp was the wide receiver one in fantasy football, it kind of like was the year after, and I was like, nah, he's not going to be able to do that again. And then you look at like what he set out like the precedent he set out, and you look at the other guys that are winning now, and like Amon-Ra, and, you know, and I don't want to label CeeDee Lamb kind of in that role, because I think a lot of people treated him as a guy that can still do kind of everything. He just played a lot of slot earlier in his career, and you know, kind of is like 50-50 now, the kind of the past 2 years. But those guys would get kind of shortchanged, like in like Dynasty, or like be like, you know, people would be like, they're good, but they're not as good as a Ja'Marr Chase, not as good as a Justin Jefferson. And for fantasy football, like, those guys have been as good because of the way offenses are playing right now. And only more guys from the McVay coaching tree keep getting jobs to call offenses. So maybe it's a good thing for us.
And it's interesting too, because I can even remember back in like this 2017-ish era, I kept thinking to myself, like, why would you not want to put your number one receiver in the slot more often, right? Because again, right, you just look at the type of coverage that player is going to get. Like, and I've said this for years, and like, I've ran this idea by real NFL receivers, especially guys like Mike Evans, who play on the perimeter, like almost, and he's actually done a little bit of decent slot work, especially during the Brady era and stuff like that. But for the most part, he's a pure perimeter receiver. And like, it's hard to assign double coverage or extra defensive attention to that slot receiver, especially now, because we're putting these guys in motion. Some of these guys full speed motion at the snap. It just makes it a complete chore. Like, but what people don't realize is that like, defensive football is all based on rules. Like, it's you have rules for your coverage, you have rules for your system, and putting a guy that's a traditional number one, you know, inside, like, you think, okay, I want to double Cooper Kupp. Well, how are you going to do that without breaking your outside coverage rules? It's difficult to do that. That it becomes like a chore to do it on a snap by snap basis. Now we're talking about, oh, these guys are moving full speed at the snap. Now your rules are not going to survive that. So I think that's a big part of it. But yeah, like, to me, it's just, why would you not want to take Julio Jones, the example I said earlier, and like, have him run 50% of his routes from the slot? Yeah, because you want to threaten the defense vertically on the outside, but defenses have now made it very difficult for you to maximize that player outside. So now that's why I think you see a guy like CeeDee Lamb, which, by the way, CeeDee Lamb, I've had this conversation with him before. It is underrated that the fact that that guy has basically like a master's degree, if not like a doctorate degree, in all three receiver positions. Yeah. Like, you don't see that very often. You see guys like master the X, you see guys master that power slot receiver position. You don't often see guys perform at an extremely high level at all three receiver positions. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of work on a preparation standpoint. It's a lot of work on an individual standpoint. And it's also difficult for an offense coordinator to truly maximize that. And I think that the Cowboys have actually been a pretty good example of why it can be difficult to, like, it took them a minute, Rich, like, to funnel their offense through CeeDee Lamb, to the point that even at the start of last season, it was a big conversation in like the dynasty space of is CeeDee Lamb kind of been like an overrated asset all along? Like, maybe he's just not that guy. It's like, you watch him play, and there's no reason that they couldn't funnel the offense through that guy. Like, it finally got them to click on it. And I think that's where this new age of play callers, as you mentioned, is really critical here, because I think those guys have been not fully ahead of the curve on everything in terms of like in-game decision making and that type of stuff, but player deployment and player creativity and like player maximization, those are the coaching trees you really want to be paying attention to and invested in, because they can take these guys that are of a traditional archetype and really truly kind of, like I said, open up the field for them to win all over.
Yeah, and one of the things that's really done, and that's from like tying it into fantasy football, is we are now seeing kind of a dominant era for like wide receiver ones from a gap. You know, I always do like these yearly like trends for each position, and just 4 years ago, I wrote about how like the wide receiver one had lost its edge on the field. Like, you know, we were seeing more 11 personnel, like targets were getting dispersed more than ever, and wide receiver ones just weren't separating from the rest of the pack at wide receivers. And now what this kind of era has like forced the teams to do is get their wide receiver one the ball in creative fashion, and they're manufacturing more targets for those players. And you look at last year, we had 11 players last year that had team target shares over 28%. Like these are like astronomical. Like, you're approaching 30%. Three guys are over 30%. Like, these are huge numbers. And you're talking about every one of every three dropbacks of balls going to this player. Like, those are huge numbers we typically didn't see. Just in 2021, you know, we only had six guys over 25%. You know, like, it's made a huge jump, and it's really made those guys kind of separate now. And it's made like the wide receiver ones even more valuable in fantasy football, where they've separated now. And there's more like a gaggle of guys that are all kind of like in a bucket. And it's made kind of like that arms race for like these guys like Tyreek and, you know, AJ Brown and CeeDee Lamb. And, you know, hopefully we see guys like Garrett Wilson make that next step, but like Amon-Ra, and it's really changed the way fantasy football is played. And we start to see that reflect itself in drafts, also paired with what this has done for the running back position as well. Yeah. You know, so it is really interesting. So like, I kind of want to spend that just right off rip into this wide receiver class. And I think all the things we talked about are why you kind of hear the rumors that some NFL teams have Malik Nabers over Marvin Harrison, like entering the NFL, because I believe Marvin Harrison can win in the slot and do and be like a diverse NFL player, but he wasn't in an offense that kind of established him in that role. He had a kind of more of a prototypical X role in the Ohio State offense. He absolutely shredded when he did play in the slot. It was just very kind of finite, the amount of opportunities he got there. But Malik Nabers is the opposite, right? Like Malik Nabers got all of these diverse, you know, kind of routes and usage. I mean, he slashed in the slot. He was awesome after the catch. And some NFL teams might say, like, that's what I want in my wide receiver one now. And that's why we might see some teams actually have him, you know, above Marvin Harrison. Like, did you find some of the same things out?
Which, by the way, is a perfectly defensible decision. My if anyone's listened to my show or any of the shows I've been on lately, my main mission statement with this class is that, like, these top three receivers are all in the same tier to me. They're all tier one prospects. They're all like guys you can take in the top 10 and feel like they're going to develop into superstars for your team. So like, you like this guy or this guy, that's cool with me. I'm not going to fight you about that, right? Like, I think it does just come down to team preference. But before kind of talking about like Malik Nabers specifically, I do think that there's going to be a temptation, and I've had people ask me this question like on my YouTube mailbag segments, like, is the X receiver archetype like kind of dying a little bit? Like, is the X receiver archetype like less valuable? And, you know, for people who aren't familiar, an X receiver is just the guy that is not this pre-snap motion, big slot player. You know, he's pure outside player. I talk about Mike Evans, great example of like a long time X. He's primarily going to line up on the line of scrimmage outside and run a vertical route tree because you want that player to threaten you at all three levels of the field. You want them to dictate coverages, et cetera, et cetera. My thought on that, and this pertains to Marvin Harrison, this pertains to Roma Dunze, because they are both like cut from stone X receiver prospects. Like, that's the role. I do think there's positional versatility with those guys. I'm with you there that, I mean, I think Roma Dunze, you could line him up in the slot and give him a two-way go, and he's going to absolutely eat that nickel corner for lunch, right? Like, there's a lot of potential for those guys to be maximized in certain ways, but primarily you want them running routes as that X receiver. I would argue, though, that these offenses that we see, you know, from the Shanahan tree, right? I mean, specifically the 49ers, and I think about the Houston Texans last year, those offenses to me, Rich, are best maximized. Like, we get caught up in all the gimmicky, gadgety stuff with the San Francisco 49ers offense and Kyle Shanahan's offense, but that offense is best maximized and fires at its highest capability when they have a true number one X receiver who can line up and run big boy routes and beat press man coverage. I think about Brandon Ayuk right now. Like, that offense is better with Brandon Ayuk in it than it was when Brandon Ayuk was in the doghouse and like they're running it through Deebo Samuel. It just is. And I mean, I know they have a different quarterback, but that is a scarier offense when you have that player. You know, the Kyle Shanahan offense with Julio Jones in 2016 with the Falcons, like, it's better there. Even like, and the way I think a lot of it still comes down to coaching, because it's the way they're asking these X receivers to run their routes, not just these like George Pickens routes or these Mike Williams routes. Like, I'm talking about the X receiver that evolves past that like kind of bucket on the axis of players. But like, think about the routes that Nico Collins ran in Houston last year, where he's running these big over routes, these big post routes and dig routes off play action as that X receiver. That's where I think that I'm not willing to like quit the X receiver archetype, I guess. I just think it depends on how the coach is going to use them and what system they're going to play in. But I do get the, it's like, I don't know if you have any kind of thoughts on that, but like, to me, I think that there are still ways to maximize that position beyond just like the kind of these Malik Nabers types, I guess.
Yeah, I think if the player is good enough to have that type of spade, it doesn't matter, right? Like, you know, and I think that's what you have with a guy like Marvin Harrison, who, like I said, I think that if he wants to get with a diverse coach, like, he can win creatively, but like he's so good at what he does. Like we talk about Justin Jefferson a little bit, or like Davante Adams, like guys that don't necessarily get like a ton of diverse usage, but they're so good at what they do and like having true spades. And like Marvin Harrison's kind of on that spectrum, right? Like as a projectable player, like this is a guy. And what it was, I think even more important, like his season last year in context, I know reception perception separates quarterback play from the wide receiver, but the fact that he had that season with Kyle McCord, where you look at guys like, you know, Malik Nabers had Jaden Daniels, who won the Heisman.
Yeah.
Roma Dunze had Michael Penix, who, you know, obviously had a bonkers passing season. You know, Kyle McCord is a guy who had to transfer because he wasn't going to be a starter this year. You know, he was 62nd in passing grade. So seeing him win that way, and the amount of double coverage like Marv faced, and like he shreds it. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, he has like true NFL spades. So I don't think the X receiver's dead. I think you just got to be good at it. And also, one of the things that we like to do this time of year is pick apart what a player does bad. But like, I always go back to DK Metcalf when he was coming out, and everyone said DK Metcalf only runs three routes. And I'm like, those three routes he's good at. Like, he's really good at those three routes. Like, he's true spades at those routes.
The
like,
Brian Thomas corollary this year, by the way, buddy. I mean, you literally look at Brian Thomas's route tree from LSU, 67.1% of his sampled routes and reception perception, 67% were curl, slant, go. DK Metcalf, his rookie season, 67% of his routes, the identical number, were slant, curl, go. So like, there is a way to max, like, that you're so right that this time of year we pick apart what these guys can and can't do. And
but you talked about the roles, like the roles matter now more in the NFL than they did for like fantasy, you know, even 10 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's almost why, Rich, like, I know you and I do not want to, because we can do this. We can do like kind of a meta discussion about like the industry and consumption and rankings and all of these things. But it's just like, anytime a reader, a subscriber, like somebody in the Discord asks me about, you know, what do we think like early dynasty rankings pre-draft? I'm like, yo, if you're ranking for like dynasty before the draft, like you might as well just throw your hands up, bro, because like there is so much that we are going to know next week. You know, when like actually like tell me who Keon Coleman is playing for before I rank him, right? Because it's gonna matter a lot, and even then it's kind of an unknown, honestly. Like, you see how these guys get run out in the preseason, then you get a better idea. So yeah, the roles really do matter. But getting back specifically to the prospects, because I'm sure people watching and listening do not want us to do the meta industry analysis here. But like Malik Nabers, I think. Catch us at the expo after a couple of beers. then we'll give you the goods. But like, you look at Malik Nabers, he is an outlier in terms of these top three receivers, because he took over 50% of his sample snaps and reception perception in the slot. I think Brett Whitefield from Fantasy Points has done a great job pointing out that like, if you're doing production modeling and like not accounting for the fact that a lot of that production from the slot in college I'm not going to say it's total BS, but it is really difficult to map to the league, in my opinion. You know, running these slot fades to the field when, you know, that's the crazy thing too about college football. Like, this year it really stuck out to me, Rich, because I was in the middle of charting prospects, and then Stephon Diggs gets traded in the middle of like my prospect prep. I'm like, hey, I got to get a profile up on Stephon Diggs, like on the site right away, as soon as possible. And then, like, so I go from watching the Texas offense on film to the Buffalo Bills offense in the NFL. It's like, man, these are two different sports. It's hard to forget that. But, and you do feel that watching LSU a little bit last year, and the charting data with Malik Nabers does show that. Like, he is, I would say, the least refined of these receiver prospects up here in the top three. But he shows you still like really solid man coverage results, really solid zone coverage results. And you mentioned the routes that we really want to see our receivers run these days, you know, these over the middle routes, you know, dig route, high success rate, slant route, super high success rate. And that's where he really gets to cook, is like after the catch. So he's not a player that, and by the way, like, these are all some of the like nitpicky flaws I can do with Malik Nabers about the lack of refinement. you could make those same nitpicky flaws with Garrett Wilson in that draft class. Like, who was my wide receiver three in that draft class? Just like Malik Nabers is my wide receiver three in this draft class. But then you see Garrett Wilson in his rookie season. He has an over 80% success rate versus press coverage in his rookie season, which is a unbelievable historical indicator. Like, you score over 80% in reception perception against press coverage as a rookie, it's like Michael Thomas, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, Tyreek Hill, Odell Beckham. Like, it's a very small list of like all future wide receiver ones. So that's not to say that Malik Nabers, despite some of this lack of refinement, can't get really good coaching and, you know, get really good individual training out there on his own and immediately like go to work and be a high quality technician by the end of his rookie season.
Yeah, spin that into, just fold that into, you know, the Brian Thomas. It's like, that's where the draft starts, right? Like, we've got these top three guys, and your rookie draft's going to generally start after that. You know, how confident are you in Brian Thomas in a transition, as transition to the NFL, winning the way he won in college? Also, is there more to Brian Thomas winning in more ways that just we didn't get to see because of Malik Nabers, right? Because of the role Malik Nabers had.
You know, and like, this is kind of a take you have to whisper a little bit, but I had this conversation with Jordan Vanek on my Yahoo show the other day that, like, people think that Brian Thomas just benefited playing across from Malik Nabers. There's a little bit of an inverse relationship there, though, too. Like, that's a tough offense to defend if you're a defensive coordinator. And, you know, like, why does Marvin Harrison have almost double the amount of routes doubled percentage in reception perception than Malik Nabers does? Well, because you mentioned it, like, Ohio State did not have a threatening quarterback. They didn't really have that like same elite receiver core around him like they have had in previous seasons. You know, decent guys in Ibuka, I think, is the other Ohio State receiver. Mm-hmm. So like, there are some other players there. He dealt with injuries this year, but you know, when you're defending LSU, you've got this freak show from the slot in Malik Nabers. You've got a quarterback that, if it's not there, he's not afraid to scramble. He's not afraid to bail. And then, like, that's a threat on its own. And then you have Brian Thomas, who can absolutely rip you on vertical routes and beyond the routes that he just runs a lot of, like those slants, the curls, and the go routes, which all have extremely high success rates. But you see him with a good success rate on out routes. You see him with a good success rate on post routes. Like, he's not a fully developed player, but I think you saw him get better and better throughout the season at running other routes than the ones that he just won on. I also think he's a better player in space than credited, and I also think he's a much better player against press coverage than credited. He was pressed on 16.4% of his routes in reception perception, and he's a 73.9% success rate. Like, if he's going to be a X receiver, he's going to be in that Martavis Bryant, DK Metcalf bucket of receivers. He's going to be the, what I've been saying, like the actualized version of what people wanted Quentin Johnston to be. If he's going to be in that role, he has to beat press coverage, and he can beat press coverage, which is incredibly encouraging.
Is he, you're locked in, like, is he just right after those guys? How close is he to the top tier? Do you think he's... Yeah.
So I think there's a clear tier drop-off from the top three guys. Those guys are in their own tier, like, as tier one prospects in my stacked board over the last four draft classes. And I have it, like I said, Marvin Harrison, Roman Dunze, Malik Nabers. And I think if you're talking about... I don't want to talk tiers in the tier, but I'll do it for you anyways. Like, I think Roman Dunze and Marvin Harrison, like, that was a tougher debate than Nabers down at three. That was the clear one for me. Then when you go into, I think, my tier two there, that is where Brian Thomas was, and he was my wide receiver four until I charted Jermaine Burton. And, like, I know Jermaine Burton has serious off the field, like, red flags. Like, everybody I trust that I talk to that knows about this stuff, that's in the league, whatever, or even some people attached to Alabama, they'll all first thing they'll tell you is like character flaws and like, some people will just be like, don't even touch, like, don't bother, because there's red flags there. You can look up some of this stuff. Some of it is lesser known, things like that, which, by the way, like, I don't know any more than just what I just said about it, right? In terms of, I've never talked to Jermaine Burton. I have no idea what he's going to be like. Most people don't even know what he's going to be like, because that's how human beings work, right? But from an on-field perspective, from a reception perception profile perspective, he has like all of the indicators I would bet on five times over. Like, ability to line up on the outside, run downfield routes, and create incredible separation against press man coverage. And Rich, to do it in a way as a pure outside receiver that threatens defenses vertically and wins on these routes over the middle of the field. I mean, this guy's a 96% success rate on dig routes. So I know you're not asking me about Jermaine Burton, but that is to say
let it be organic, man. Let it be organic.
That is to say that if he didn't have these off-field red flags, character red flags, whatever you want to call them, to me, he would, and like from a, my rankings perspective, I'm only ranking on like what like reception perception tells you and some of the, some, you know, some other indicators too, right? Like just their resumes and things like that. He is my wide receiver 4 in the class. And then Brian Thomas is wide receiver 5, but obviously he's not going to get drafted that way. This is a guy that could fall to the, you know, the third day. Right. And then in your dynasty rookie draft, don't be taking him into like the late first round. You don't have to do that because he's going to go much later than that. But like,
which again is another riff we can do on rankings.
1,000%. So yeah, it's just, that to say that like that tier, I think is actually then pretty isolated from the rest of the class. So those two guys, again, throwing out Jermaine Burton a little bit and really just focusing on Brian Thomas, I feel pretty secure about him as a clear cut round one grade for me, because I think that, yeah, he has the high ceiling that you want to think about from this archetype of receiver, the vertical X, that type of stuff. But I also think that player just has some level of utility, even if he never becomes like a wide receiver one, like a number one receiver for his NFL team. I think he can fit into that like volatile X receiver bucket, you know, and hopefully go a little farther along the archetype there to be more of DK Metcalf than like a Martavis Bryant.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, you go back to Jermaine Burton. I mean, he's been productive every year of his college career. And, you know, you go back to 2021, he was a sophomore on Georgia and was second on the team in receiving yards, a team that had Ladd McConkey and Adonai Mitchell on it. Two guys that are definitely projected to get drafted, you know, ahead of Jermaine Burton. Let's kind of talk a little bit about those two guys. That was an elite segue by you to set me up for. But let's talk about Adonai Mitchell. Well, one in general, this class, as we kind of get out of those top three, and then everyone kind of has like a, you know, Brian Thomas is like their soft four, and then it gets kind of wide open. What we have in this class is like a lot of guys that don't have like stellar production profiles and kind of take more squint to see it stuff, but are generally liked. And then they're getting pushed up in this draft class because this draft class is weaker at a lot of other positions. And it's really helping the wide receiver group out. I mean, we would never have seen Adonai Mitchell flirt with like first round draft capital, or a guy like Ladd McConkey flirt with first round draft capital based on just like kind of their overall production, you know, in college, even when teams like cared about the scouting stuff even more, right? And didn't weigh like analytics and production stuff into kind of like their process. But let's talk a little bit about those guys. We could start with, I guess, the Texas guys first and kind of just like that offense, because Xavier Worthy also is in that bucket of where gamers are going to be like, all right, I've got the 106, the 108 in my rookie drafts. How confident am I pulling the trigger on Xavier Worthy? So let's talk a little bit about those guys.
Yeah, Ladd McConkey, Adonai Mitchell, two guys that have gotten their production profiles screwed by playing with Brock Bowers early in their career. It's crazy that Brock Bowers like led Georgia in receiving yards as a true freshman.
Where's the Brock Bowers reception perception? Have you gotten asked for it?
Oh, number one, you know, I've been asked for sure. And he's actually like, the fact that I just compared him to Cooper Kupp at the top of this is going to have, you know, my mentions destroyed for the Brock Bowers Discord profile. The Discord will be popping. It's already been, but nevertheless, he might even be less wide receiver than Kyle Pitts, which I'm never charting Kyle Pitts. So there is that. But yeah, just focusing on.
Also, we'll be playing in a McVay coaching tree offense this year.
Not wrong. Not wrong. I'm very curious as to like, who do they use in the more like creative middle of the field fashion, him or Drake London more? I think that's actually a really fascinating question, because London has been so far just like a true perimeter X receiver. And he actually saw his like boundary curl routes like go up last year with Desmond Ridder, because Desmond Ridder can't read the middle of the field.
London in college was that guy.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. He was more of that player, and yeah, we'll see what happens, but
we're getting off course.
Buddy, we could get off course here for another 5 hours or so talking about this stuff. But Mitchell is really interesting, because, and I actually think it's funny that we're having this conversation about these positional archetypes, and like the first thing you said on this show is like how much more important these like slot receiver players are to fantasy football now. And, you know, really, I mean, fantasy scoring is not everything in terms of player evaluation, but a lot of those players that you're talking about are the best receivers in the league right now, you know, CeeDee Lamb and Tyreek Hill and all this stuff. I actually think that the NFL draft sort of like consensus is very slowly coming around to this, because you do still have people obsessing about that X receiver archetype and like, okay, yeah, Ricky Pearsall, really good, but he's a slot guy. Like, Ladd McConkey, is he going to be a slot guy? It's like, who cares? Like, you can funnel the offense through these players now at this point. But if we are looking at Adonai Mitchell, he is kind of, once you get past the big three and you get past Brian Thomas, he is clear cut to me like the next best X receiver, like pure perimeter receiver archetype. And really, I think there's a drop off to him. Drop off from him down to like Javon Baker. Then after that is like maybe the next best guy, or Jermaine Burton again, depending on where you kind of you categorize him. I really like Adonai Mitchell. He is someone that I think, depending on the exact metric you want to look at in reception perception, you could tell me a story of how he fails. You could tell me a story about how he hits, because his success rate versus zone coverage is pretty low. It's 31st percentile, but he's a great man press coverage beater. You know, 74.1% success rate versus man, 74.4% success rate versus press. Which is, if you're going to be an outside vertical receiver, I don't care if the league wide zone numbers are all up, you still need to beat man coverage. Like, you're still going to get more man coverage. You're going to get zone coverage that turns into pattern match, which is essentially then man coverage. You're going to have to know how to beat that stuff. So, like, for him to show those skills, I think is more important than his like his lower zone coverage number. But if he doesn't improve there, then you could be looking at a guy that's maybe in that George Pickens bucket of like volatile X receiver. But I do think the way he runs routes, like the style of his route running, is very reminiscent to DeAndre Hopkins, where you're kind of like, how fast is this guy? Is he moving at full speed? Some people even like kind of throw out like, is he lazy? Is he loafing it? But like, they have this like very lull you to sleep style of route running that I do think fits at that X receiver archetype. So he has been a guy that I'm willing to rank, depending on who we're talking about here. Most NFL draft analysis kind of has him as like a fringe round one, round two selection, which is where I have him. I know that the dynasty community is obviously much lower on him from a production standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, Mitchell's a tricky guy from like a fantasy football stance, because you do see it from like a route running perspective. What's tougher to see for him is like kind of what you said, like you're evaluating him as like a pure X receiver kind of. And a lot of people throw out the comp to CeeDee Lamb, and like there's just nothing further from the truth with the, when the football is in his hands versus what CeeDee Lamb, going back to even his days in college. Like Adonai Mitchell, I don't know if I've seen him break a tackle. I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny, Rich, because part of me is like, I think we'd be better as a society if we stopped caring about yak numbers for vertical X receivers, but he's still not good with the ball in his hands. Like even in the opportunities
about,
that he
like,
has.
Do you have, cause you're talking about taking him potentially at 107 or something in your rookie draft. And you kind of want to have an out to say like, he could be a wide receiver one over a stretch of his career. And we talked about like in the open of this show, does he have that ability to kind of win on those routes? Is he going to garner those types of usage where you can hit him, you know, over the middle of the field for, you know, a 7-yard slant, and he can turn that into a 35-yard game, right? Like, and that's what's harder, I think, to project for Mitchell. Yes. I definitely believe he can win as an X receiver. You know, obviously he played in an offense that kind of cannibalized itself. Or one, Texas like wanted to be a running team early in the year. Then when Jonathan Brooks got hurt, they still were kind of a running team to protect, you know, Quinn Ewers. And, you know, all those guys kind of hurt each other, because even Xavier Worthy's production from the first start of his career went way down this year. And then you got Jatavion Sanders and, you know, Jordan Whittington, who also is in this NFL draft. Like they're literally their entire pass catching core is in the NFL draft this year. And they all kind of hurt each other paired with the quarterback.
But yeah, to the point about Adonai Mitchell is like, yeah, I scouting him as an X receiver, I think he fits in so many teams, especially teams in the back half of the first round. It's teams that we'd love to see him land on, like the Bills, like the Chiefs. This is the archetype of receiver that they need, because those teams have guys that can play off the line of scrimmage, that can play in the slot, that can run these like kind of gimme routes over the middle of the field. And I do think Adonai Mitchell can run slants, he can run dig routes, he can run crossing routes and get separation against man coverage and zone coverage as well. Like, those are good routes for him. Honestly, it's kind of funny that like some of the routes he's not as good on is these like curl routes and routes working back to the quarterback, which is, again, it's a little weird, because that's typically what you'd think for a vertical X receiver. You want them to do that to be able to maximize themselves. But at the same time, I go back to that Pickens comparison, where like, if we are 2 years into his NFL career and people are complaining about Adonai Mitchell, all he does is run vertical routes, and like, he has a bad quarterback. It's a shaky offensive environment. He's super volatile because of it. It's like, well, yeah, that's the positional archetype that we're talking about. And from a fantasy standpoint, like, people don't like that. People do not like that up and down, like, volatile, that volatile outside receiver. And it's just kind of funny because I don't know where you stand on George Pickens as a player, but it is always kind of funny to me that people like, hey, all he runs is run deep routes. All he runs is run go routes. It's like, well, that's the routes you want him to run. Like, what do you want him to be doing? You want this guy to get like little Mickey Mouse routes? Like, no, that's no coach. And I'm not defending Matt Canada because Matt Canada is a terrible offensive coordinator. Like, one of the worst offenses I've ever charted in the NFL. Matt Canada offense, like a high school offense. But still, most coaches are not going to look at George Pickens and have him not run a bunch of vertical routes. And I think A.D. Mitchell can fall into that same bucket, which from a fantasy standpoint, based on where he lands, could be pretty problematic.
Yeah, more of like a flirt with wide receiver two production, be volatile on a weekly level. That all makes sense. What about, his teammate, Xavier Worthy, you know, a guy who is getting probably unfairly lumped in with all the other fast guys that have come into the NFL? A lot of the fast guys that have come in the NFL don't have like the production profile that Xavier Worthy had. Obviously, the one guy he kind of is getting like thrown into is John Ross, who had like that huge year at Washington right before the NFL. But Worthy's like, you know, his sample size in college is just so much greater than guys like Darius Hayward Bay and Marquise Goodwin and Jacoby Ford, those other guys that ran fast.
Yeah, the kind of elevator pitch here with Xavier Worthy is that he is a much better real wide receiver than the like Dree Archers or the Jerome Mathis or JJ Nelson, some of these guys that, you know, our buddy Scott Barrett was the one who pointed out like, oh, the fastest 40 times is only like at the combine, there's only 1,000 yard receiver there and it's Santana Moss. But like, you look at some of those names up towards the top closer to where Xavier Worthy is, and he's definitely a better real receiver than those guys. That being said, he does not have a, in my opinion, like complete profile. Like, this, I'm usually the last guy, Rich, to point out like size of the position and the limitations that that might create for a player, because for the most part over the years, if you can play and you show an example of like, I can win in these ways that we think that small receivers can't win, like, I'm willing to excuse that. But Xavier Worthy, that's not the case. Like, he's got a sub 30th percentile success rate versus press coverage. He's not good in contested situations. He gets brought down on first contact when guys get a hand on him a lot more than you'd like. And, you know, the first thing people, I actually had a listener point this out, like, aren't you being a little hard on Xavier Worthy? Which, by the way, I think Xavier Worthy is a perfectly fine round two pick. That's where I would take him in the NFL draft. I don't think he's a first rounder, but I think he's a priority, like early second round type of player is where I would kind of have him graded as. So I don't really think I'm being hard on him, but if you do, that's fine. You compare him to guys like these smaller players that came into the league that have become success stories, like Tank Dell, 73.9% success rate versus press. Even Josh Downs last year, 76%. Devontae Smith, 78.9%. Zay Flowers, 72.7%. All these guys are considerably bigger than Xavier Worthy, who is all the way down below 60% success rate versus press. So that's my just overall issue with Xavier Worthy in terms of him being like a high volume target commanding receiver in the NFL, is I just think he's got to get better against press coverage to really survive as a true receiver at the next level. That being said, this is the perfect time for him to come into the NFL, right? With all the pre-snap motion and the way guys are trying to weaponize these pre-snap motion plays. Like, he goes to the Rams, that would be an excellent landing spot where you'd see him kind of crush it, because again, he's more real receiver than some of these kind of gadgety players we've seen run those routes in the past.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about the weight thing, and you know, that was the difference between when people were kind of pushing back on Devontae Smith, when he being an outlier, like, oh, is this Todd Pinkston all over again? Like, we haven't had a wide receiver like this late, but like, he was a bona fide actual wide receiver. Like, Devontae Smith absolutely slayed. Worthy's a little bit more like kind of catawampus. Like, you see some of the stuff like the 165 pounds, the fifth percentile, like hand size, the 20th percentile, like arm length. And he's not a guy that's like winning in contested catches. He's got a lot of screen production as well. Again, that stuff this is the time to come to the NFL if that's your profile, but he does have that as well. What's interesting, I think, about, you know, tying that into Ladd McConkey is Ladd McConkey actually has shorter arms and smaller hands than Xavier Worthy, which is pretty wild to think about.
Yeah.
But you know, his actual like route production and winning and getting open is kind of like his calling card, where like Worthy kind of won more. He didn't win completely on speed, but you know, he like we just talked about, he got a lot more of that screen production that really wasn't McConkey's game. And McConkey kind of like, we saw some of the, in 2022, some of that show up with him. He had some kind of like iffy drops where you're like, ugh, like, you know, that's where you see like the hand size or the arm length win. But like, when you have a dude that can get that open, like how concerned are you even about that?
Yeah, that's the thing. I do think he's a player that you're going to have to cater to in terms of alignment a little bit. He is not your typical gritty white slot receiver. He is definitely much more of a downfield player than that. I actually think he comps pretty similarly to Tyler Lockett. Like Ladd McConkey runs some of the best vertical out routes in the class. And, you know, you go back and look at the historical reception perception data. That's actually a pretty fair comp when you look at like per route success rates is Ladd McConkey to Tyler Lockett. But he definitely struggles with press. Right now, he's got one of the lowest success rate versus press coverages in the class, but not on a huge amount of attempts. And really, then it's offset by what is some of the best success rate versus man and zone coverage scores in the class. So I do think really good route runner, separator down the field. I could certainly see him being like more of a niche player in the NFL than like a big time fantasy player. You know, that is certainly possible. But I do think he's a quality prospect that is worth kind of that late first, early second, again, sort of appeal to him, because he's just going to make your receiver room better and he's going to give your quarterback easy throws. Like the reality of all this conversation that we've had about receivers and where they are lining up and where they're running routes and all that, we're just trying to make the quarterback's job easier. We're trying to give the quarterbacks answers, right? Like all of these systems and quarterback friendly and like quarterback proof system. Well, it's, you got to have the right receivers to get open and give these windows to the guys behind center, which Ladd McConkey can absolutely be a part of. And he's super underrated after the catch, man. I mean, he really does tackles in the open field. Like again, beyond the, you're not seeing Wes Welker or Danny Amendola doing any of these like big plays after the catch that you will see from Ladd McConkey. So overall, I really like him as a prospect.
All right. So we're getting along like we knew we probably would, you know, kind of running here 45 minutes, but I do want to get somebody. You already gave us Jermaine Burton. So, I mean, now I'm going to ask you to give us another guy here. But one of the things I like about this wide receiver class is the word arbitrage really comes to mind with this wide receiver class. Like when people say it's deep, that's what I think is arbitrage. I'm like, ooh, like I look at a guy like Ladd McConkey and he's going, you know, he's going to be like a fringe 1-2 pick. And then I'm just like, all right, well, what about guys like, you know, Jalen McMillan that are later, right? Like the situations like that, or like we talked about A.D. Mitchell, and I'm like, well, what about Keon Coleman or Devontae Walker or like Roman Wilson, right? Like the word arbitrage just comes to my mind. So as we kind of get deeper into this draft, like who are some of the other guys you like outside of Jermaine Burton?
Isn't it nice that we can have like our little phrases and just say them year after year, 10 years into it? Like, I mean, hey, it's good business if we can get it, Rich.
I mean, to me, this class though is like as nebulous. Like if you were to tell me like Roman Wilson was good, like 3 years from now, I'd be like, okay. Like if you were to tell me Javon Baker was good, or like, I'd be like, okay. Like,
and if you were to tell me that none of them were good,
yes, because exactly. Like, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
I would also believe that also because I think we're spoiled by what is good in the NFL these days, like in from a fantasy perspective. Like there are guys that, you know, and maybe people just will say to me like, yeah, you're an idiot and you haven't like given up on your bad takes or whatever. But there are guys that I've liked in the past, like Curtis Samuel, like Elijah Moore. Like I think these guys are fine, good NFL players. They're just not like needle movers, right? They're not like needle movers in fantasy, particularly because they really haven't been in the right situation, which if you want to come down to it, like, again, I really don't want to steer us into a meta conversation about fantasy, but do you see that I really do want to steer us into a meta conversation about fantasy? It's like, these guys are just not like, it all comes down to situation and stuff like that. So like, they just end up in this nebulous group of wide receivers where like, I can appreciate them watching them on film and charting their routes and stuff, but like, they may never produce in the way that people want them to for a variety of reasons. Some of them do and do not have to do with the players themselves. So there's a lot of guys in that particular bucket. Man, we come like down. I have Ricky Pearsall ranked really high. I know. I don't know if he like counts as this kind of arbitrage type player because I think he's gotten some steam, but I really like his ability to be one of these potential inside outside high target commanding receivers. Cause he's an older player, but like he's not like your Xavier Leggett's, where you watch Xavier Leggett and you're like, that guy's kind of just out there out-athleting people as a 23-year-old against 19-year-old bros. But like Ricky Pearsall is out there winning against those younger players, but he's doing it with a lot of like actual clean craft and technique. So to me, I don't have as much of the age concerns with a player like that. He's definitely somebody that I think from a draft media standpoint, I think when they actually get drafted, they'll be closer than this. But I think he's like maybe not even arbitrage on Ladd McConkey. I think he's kind of a better player, like a better prospect than a Ladd McConkey. So he certainly qualifies there as a player that I like. We've brought up Javon Baker's name a couple of times, and he's a kind of a strange player because he runs so many downfield routes, so many go routes. It's really hard to like get a handle on his route running in the short to underneath area. But I think if you lose out, if you're a team like Buffalo, bring them up again that so clearly needs an X receiver. You can't trade up into the top 10 for one of these high-tier prospects. You can't get Brian Thomas as in a more mild trade-up, and you don't take A.D. Mitchell at 28. Maybe you come back in the third round for a Javon Baker as that type of archetype. And then if like the more slot receiver arbitrage play, I love Malik Washington. That's like a classic.
Oh, dude, so he's – yeah. Well, you brought up two of the guys I love. Malik Washington, my comp was if Maurice Jones-Drew was a wide receiver.
Oh, that's so good. That is so good because
he's a bowling ball, man. He's an absolute bowling ball.
And you just know some team is going to love that. Like one of these little Shanahan offenses, little Shanahan trees are going to love that. He would make a ton of sense the Vikings are not going to have a ton of picks because they're going to trade up for a quarterback and all that stuff, but he would make so much sense as like a slot receiver to go alongside with Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson. A lot of potential there. I love Malik Washington because he's got such a good understanding of space, got such a good understanding of leverage, and he just has great hands. Like in addition to being a bowling ball after the catch, he truly catches everything. Like he's got some of the best hands in this class. So again, one of these guys that might become not really a needle mover at the NFL like level, but if he ends up becoming a target volume vacuum somewhere, I could see him having these big seasons.
Yeah. And he was an explosive athlete too, which I think kind of backs up some of the stuff you see from him. I do love him as a late round guy. He's one of those guys like you like, and you're just waiting to see where the draft capital is, like what team's investing in him and like where he lands. That's what he said. Like those guys are tough to rank. You'd be bullish on them. But reception, I think, was made for a guy like Ricky Pearsall. Like this is a dude that he played with trash quarterbacks. Like absolutely, and not great offenses. Like, and Anthony Richardson, I say that from a perspective from quarterback play. Like for fantasy football, Anthony Richardson is what he is. But from like he's not helping any wide receivers. Like and that's one thing that scares me about Michael Pittman, who I know we like as a player. Like still like big picture, it's like well. Michael Pittman got to play basically hands free without Anthony Richardson last year.
I like Anthony Richardson because I love like a processor at quarterback, and I do think he's a very good processor. We just have to hope he gets more accurate. But I can already tell myself that I'm gonna have to at some point have like a come to Jesus meeting with myself about like the Colts offense and where I fall on, because it just. Especially if they draft one of these receivers in this class, I can see myself being very, very high on this unit, but it's a whole nother tangent.
Yeah, but I love Ricky Pearsall. I love that call. I love Malik Washington. I love those calls. Those are guys that I've been kind of drafting. You watched a lot of Roma Dunze. Did you watch the other two Washington guys? Do you have kind of takes on those two guys?
They're the two last guys I need to finish. Them and like Brendan Rice and Tez Walker. I need like are the last few players I have not gotten eyes on that I definitely want to have on the side.
Tez Walker is going to be a pretty clean eval for you, I think, when you get to him. I mean,
there's a few people in the Discord that are just like, yeah, you can probably go ahead and skip that one. But I'm like, you know what? We got to round out the database somehow. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, like, because obviously, if Devontae Walker comes into the NFL, I think 8 to 12 years ago, like he's a like. And if every offense wants that guy, now he kind of fits like a certain style of offense where you want, like, because he's like that flanker that's just he's lid lifting, dude. Like that's what he's doing. And that's gonna be interesting. Two guys I want to talk about real fast. We didn't talk about Troy Franklin. Troy Franklin is a guy I think a lot of gamers are trying to figure out like what's going on. Originally everyone thought he's like a lock for round one. Now it looks like he's probably gonna be like a fringe round one, or maybe just outright fall into round two. He's a tough eval too. Like Oregon in general is a tough eval because, dude, that offense, like they had the best offensive line in the country. They basically have a quarterback that's played, he's made 60 career starts. And they play in the Pac-10, which I mean, it is what it is. Like, and Tyquan Thornton to me. Or, oh, sorry, I literally let it in.
Yeah.
I let it off. Dude, he reminds me of Tyquan Thornton coming out at Baylor, where, like, all he did was, like, run clean slants and, like, got to run. And I'm just like, dude, this is, like, what I saw Tyquan Thornton do at Baylor. And, like, it's terrifying. But tell me what you got on Troy Franklin.
That is a very funny Freudian slip by you. But it's interesting because, man, I think Troy Franklin, I think Xavier Legette is the most difficult evaluation in this draft class, but I kind of sneakily think,
especially because the COVID stuff, like if there's no COVID year granted to these guys, like do we even know who Xavier Legette is?
No. Like it is an unheard of profile, and like the reception perception doesn't really make it any easier because I think he's another guy that, tell me where he plays. Like I also think Troy Franklin kind of fits into that regard too, because, and I'll get to that point, but like he is a difficult evaluation as well, because you look at him and I think the route running is really clean. I really like the way he runs routes. Like I think there's nuance, I think there's detail, I think there's solid technique with him as a technician and as a route runner and as a separator. The problem is, and again, this comes back to the Xavier Worthy thing, Rich, I'm usually not the guy that's going to harp on player size and weight and all that stuff. Like I just want to evaluate them from a play standpoint, but you know what? Troy Franklin would be a lot better if he could just put on like 10 to 15 pounds, because all the problems in his game, other than the fact that he does not trust his hands, which is like, if you just want to throw Troy Franklin out because you just tell me that guy will never trust his hands, I'm actually okay with that. And I'm usually not a big drops guy, but he clearly has confidence and like weird issues with catching the football. Like he's a good tracker of the football. He's just kind of a mess technically. So maybe you can fix that. I don't know. But the thing with him is just like the size and the lack of physicality in his game shows up in all the numbers. It shows up in his contested catch rate. And you look at his success rate versus press, 58.5%. Again, it's down there with like Xavier Worthy. It's not a good number, but his success rate versus man coverage is 70.3%. His success rate versus press is 82.4%. Those are good results. So it's just when he's not running routes over the middle, which, by the way, we just talked about, we want our receivers running routes over the middle. But like when he's running those kind of pure boundary stretch routes, he's pretty good. He shows an ability to win if he's not playing like contacted within the route. That being said, like to spin it maybe positively, I kind of had a lot of the same thoughts, but I think this player was better. I had a lot of the same thoughts with Jordan Addison last year. When you look at his success rate versus man coverage scores, 71.3%, success rate versus zone, 80%, success rate versus press, 51%. So very similar kind of like split there between Troy Franklin and Jordan Addison. Actually, Jax Falcone from the Undroppables was the one who pointed this out to me on his show, so I'm stealing his comparison now. But that was one of those things where I was worried about Jordan Addison until I saw where he landed. Then I see like, oh, he's going to play with the Vikings. He's going to play alongside Justin Jefferson and never really get a lot of press and get a lot of soft coverage. He can run routes and win in that scenario. So Troy Franklin's a guy that if he lands in a situation like that across from a high-end X receiver, I would be a lot less concerned, you know, come Friday or probably Friday evening, because I think he gets drafted on day two. Although I have heard some people think he could really slip in the draft, but that's kind of regardless. But
there have been some rumors.
Yeah, there have been some rumors. I overall think that he probably goes day two, and if he goes to a team like across from a high quality X receiver, I can see him fitting really well.
It might be a blessing in disguise that he slides, to be honest.
100%. And I will say, I think the Addison Franklin comparison kind of falls apart because Franklin was more of like a pure speed threat, whereas Addison was better running routes over the middle. So I could see him growing into being more of a volume sponge receiver than I can feel that with Troy Franklin. So again, that's why I've said he's a very difficult evaluation in this class.
Yeah. What I've heard from you over the last, you know, hour is something that, and you can see if I've come to this conclusion incorrectly or not, but something I've been kind of preaching is, you know, if you have like 106 through 110, 111 in your rookie drafts, like I think it's more advantageous in this class to try to trade back and just get multiple bites of the apple at this draft class. Like just, you know, when you look at the guys that are going to be in that bucket, they are kind of sketchy. You can definitely tell yourself the positive end and be positive with a glass half full. But like, would you rather have A.D. Mitchell or have Ricky Pearsall plus Roman Wilson plus Javon Baker or get Jermaine Burton, right? Like, I think that's probably the advantageous way to kind of play things. Obviously, you need a trade partner to do that, or like someone to like these guys. Obviously, it's easier said than done, but that's how I've been treating this class. I keep going back to that word arbitrage. I want to have, I think, a lot of second round picks in this rookie class.
Yeah. Great example of this is, by the way, you brought up Roman Wilson. I'm not a Roman Wilson guy, but like, but I take your point that like someone in that bucket of receivers.
Yeah, I'm just like saying like, because eventually like a couple of these guys are going to hit and we're going to have and a lot of, some of these guys are going to fail. Like we talked about the production profiles definitely and the scouting profiles are like, they're volatile between these guys. That's the one thing about this class. We talk about how deep it is, but like they're still limited on sure things.
Yeah, I mean, look, honestly, we're in a dynasty mock with that Ryan McDowell put on, right? That's going on now. You had the second overall pick. I had the 11th overall pick, and I was like, well, this sucks. Last thing I want is the 11th overall pick in a class like this, because I'm sitting there on the clock and like, in a post-draft situation, I probably would have just, honestly, one of these running backs probably wouldn't be available to me, but I would have even considered like a Jonathan Brooks or a Trey Benson. I did think about one of those guys at the 11th pick, just because like, the receivers at that point, I ended up taking A.D. Mitchell, and I'll feel great about it. Like, I would rather trade back from that 11th spot and maybe get a bite at, like, Keon Coleman, depending on where he lands, and Ricky Pearsall in the second round. Like, if that's possible, if that's viable. You know, I'd rather be able to pick, like, multiple guys in that kind of second to third round range. So I'm with you that I think this is either a year to trade down or get up into the top. Like, get up into those top picks,
which
like,
is harder to do,
which is obviously much harder because everybody is listening to all the content about why these guys are good and blah blah blah. It makes sense, but like, I think especially in a one quarterback league, like, it gets sketchy after five. Like, I think it gets really sketchy after five, and that's like, just without knowing landing spot, like I said at the top, it's always kind of fraught to do dynasty conversations, in my opinion, without knowing where these guys are going, but still, just, you're going to have to be really bullish on some of these guys and really right on the landing spots to have confident takes, I think, between pick 8 and pick 12.
All right, let me get you for like an extra like 5 to 10 here, just real quick. We've brought up the, you know, Keon Coleman's name a couple of times. Obviously, it's like, it's become fun to hate Keon Coleman like throughout this draft process. But like, he's one of those guys you talked about. If he falls in like a Shanahan McVay coaching tree type offense, like, that's a dude that can run that dig route like just over and over, and you can spam him on that dig route. So like, he's gonna be kind of more landing spot dependent, but like, it seems like it's fun to hate him. Like, obviously, you know, he has some limitations, but you know, did you watch, I know you did Keon Coleman. Did you do Johnny Wilson too or no?
I haven't done Johnny Wilson yet, 'cause I've been pushing off like the tight end thing.
He's not a tight end.
I know he's not a tight end. And like, he should, the funny thing is, Rich, without even charting him, like, I have seen Johnny Wilson play 'cause I've watched Keon Coleman. Like, that guy he's not even doing like big slot receiver stuff. He's like a pure boundary receiver. And whether you think that's going to work in the league is a whole nother conversation. But like, if Johnny Wilson is going to be converted to tight end in the first couple years of his career, and you draft him in your rookie draft, you might as well light that pick on fire, because he will not contribute as a tight end.
We've done this with Chase Claypool, and you know, not everyone's Darren Waller. Like, we've done it with a couple guys.
Well, and even Darren Waller, think about how long that took, because what Johnny Wilson is doing.
When he was even drafted either. So it's like, you know, in rookie drafts, that is like, he was
right on his radar. But that's like, he does the wide receiver to tight end conversion. It just takes forever for you to actually be able to learn the second position, an already difficult position anyway. So,
You mentioned Keon Coleman, like, taking a shot on him, 'cause I think he's going to be that guy that kind of slides in rookie drafts because everyone's heard so many negative things about him, but probably has better capital than people think is going to happen come next week.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, so this is one thing that I looked at this past season in terms of this past year in terms of like historic reception perception data. Like, I looked at the guys that I've charted in all the draft classes, guys that finished below the 35th percentile in man zone and press coverage, or at least two of the three. Among those players, among that sample of players, there have been 34 guys total that finished below the 35th percentile in either man, zone, or press coverage. Two of the three, or all three. Of those players, I would say 9 of them have had like moments in the league five of them are true inarguable hits. And if you want like all of the names, I go through them on my YouTube page. So you can go check out my YouTube channel and go through all this. But like the five like inarguable hits are Amon Ross St. Brown. It's Cooper Kupp, who was really good against zone coverage, but poor against man and press. Juju Smith-Schuster, Rashee Rice, and Tyler Boyd. Like those guys are all big slot receivers. They're all inside players. So when I see Keon Coleman as a guy who can't really separate because he fits into this bucket of players that's below the 35th percentile against man and press coverage, but he has a lot of size, I see him as a candidate to move into that big slot receiver position. Like, I don't want Keon Coleman out there like throwing jump balls and stuff like that. Like, don't make him Mike Williams. By the way, Mike Williams, a little better separator than you remember. But I don't want him being like a jump ball guy on the outside. I want him kind of running routes with the free release and crossing routes and slant routes and dig routes and that stuff. So I see him as a guy that could move positions in the NFL and end up being a real, like, not Johnny Wilson move positions, but move from that outside receiver position to a big slot receiver and end up like gobbling up a lot of targets. You know, Danny Jeremiah is compared to like Marcus Colston. I think that's like a perfect way to envision using him as a player.
I like that. I got one hot seat question for you. Last year's consensus number one wide receiver, Jackson Smith and Jigba. If you had to slot him in this class, and you can say hindsight or not hindsight related, him as a prospect, where are you putting him?
Yeah, I mean, this is why I have a stacked board on my site. Like, I stack up all the guys, and I do it before the draft, and I never change it. So from what I would say as a prospect, I would have him wide receiver 4 behind the top three guys. But and still, to me, he was a tier 2 prospect. He was not a tier 1 prospect. Mm-hmm. I thought he was kind of alone in that tier 2. I wish I had been like, I was very bullish on Zay Flowers, but I still made him a tier 3 prospect, but he was my wide receiver 2 in that class. I thought there was a gap between JSN to those other guys. That's probably where I don't think that here and now today, but as a prospect, I would have said he was a tier 2 guy in this class, and he would be ahead of Brian Thomas and Jermaine Burton and behind the top 3 guys.
There you go. It's beautiful. Listen, a couple minutes over than what, you know, kind of the probably producer Matt wanted us to go over, keep it under an hour, but it happens when we get together, you know, start to talk about this. And we didn't even cover, you know, another like 10 guys we could have probably gotten the weeds on. Let everyone know though, where they can find all this information you were dropping, man.
Yeah, receptionperception.com is, of course, the website. It's where you can find the stack board I mentioned. It's where you can find all of my prospect profiles. James Coe and I do a great job breaking this down for you in a more digestible format on our podcast, Reception Perception, the show. And you can find all my stuff at Yahoo as well, Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. All my writing is over there as well. So, hey, man, Rich, I always appreciate you doing this and having me on. And, you know, it's one of my favorite conversations every year and one I will always treasure as long as we're both here and doing this thing, man. I always keep this on the schedule.
Oh, I love it, man. I appreciate you taking the time as always. Definitely go check out Reception Perception, Matt at Yahoo Sports. As a reminder, you can go to sharpfootballanalysis.com. You can get all of our pre-draft content from myself, Raymond Summerlin, Ryan McChrystal, Brent Donahue. You can get the draft guide for fantasy football that me and Ray are going to be pumping out content all the way through August. You can use promo code SAVE5 on that and then check out pre-orders for Warren's book. 1 week away, I'll be back at the front of next week with Ryan McDowell to talk about kind of this dynasty class in general from a dynasty stance as a top-down dynasty conversation. So definitely check that out at the front of next week. Other than that, you know, we'll see you start of next week, everybody.